Great to have you with us for this edition of Garden Talk. Thanks for spending some of your day with us. Up next, we're going to share the wisdom of two very wise and experienced vegetable gardeners, even though it's sometimes hard to tell.
Yeah, we don't spend a lot of time answering the questions, I think.
Oh, man, our vicars of vegetables, Erwin Goldman, professor and Wisconsin potato and vegetable growers, KWS chair in the Department of Plant and Agro-Ecosystem Sciences at UW-Madison. Erwin, great to see you.
I'm so happy to be here, Larry. Thanks for having us.
And with us by phone, Jim Nienhuis, who is Professor Emeritus, also from the Department of Plant and Agro-Ecosystem Sciences, now working in, retired in Central America. I don't know if he's really retired. He's helping some small farmers, as I understand it. Jim Nienhuis, welcome.
I'm here.
You're good. It's good that you're here.
I'm not there. I'm here.
Yeah, you're here?
No. I'm not there. I'm here. I'm in Costa Rica. I'm in my wife's house.
Okay. So you're in your wife's house in Costa Rica. All right. So
I'm not retired. I guess I'm retired, but I am still pretty active. We work with, we have a small farm, and we have a greenhouse, and we, that requires a lot of work.
Jim, I mean, we've heard a rumor up here that you're considered the, kind of the informal mayor of that town. Is that an accurate?
That's actually true.
That's true. Okay.
They call me El Alcalde.
That makes sense. I'm glad they have your leadership.
Well, I tell you what, we've got lots of fun things to talk about. I was trying to remember when you guys first started on the show. Jim, do you?
I think it's been 20 years probably since we started. So we've had a 20-year tradition of sometimes answering the questions that listeners are asking.
And by the way,
the questions are great. The answers are whatever we want.
Well, if you have a question, by the way, you could join in, or maybe a haiku. Jim, I remember you very passionately reading a haiku. It might have been about a pepper, or maybe it was a tomato.
Oh, I've got to tell you a quick story. It won't take long. we grow peppers in our greenhouse, hot peppers, right?
Yep.
But the market is really difficult. So what we do is I built a chili roaster. So we were selling roasted chilies. And then we had so much excess that we began to make salsa, and we would sell it at a local farmer's market. You can't sell it at a local farmer's market. You have to sell it to gringos, actually. So you have to go to the beach.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a farmer's market at the beach, and we sell to the Canadians. And you're right. I do offer them the haiku, but I have to do it in Spanish, right? El amor es un chile. El picor se mantiene en la lengua, aún después el primer beso.
Well, for those who can't speak Spanish, how many
teachers come to me and they say, "Oh, thank you for that haiku. We were just studying that in sixth grade." The Canadians are the most fun.
Oh my gosh! Well, now what is that haiku in English?
Okay. Love is a pepper. Its heat lingers on your lips long after the kiss.
Oh,
beautiful.
That's great.
Yeah, you know, I'm all for romance.
I mean, didn't you say that the eating a pepper is sort of like falling in love? Wasn't that your analogy?
Oh, yeah. It's the essential equivalent to falling in love, because you get that sweating.
Yeah.
You get that blushing in the cheeks, you get those palpitations, mm-hmm, in the heart.
Mm-hmm.
eating hot peppers is the essential vegetable equivalent to falling in love. Same thing.
Oh, well, I had one on peppers.
Let's hear it.
It's not as good as Jim's, I don't think, but it's pretty good. Green leaf, tiny stem. It grows in the summer sun. Hmm. Bite it. It is hot. Says, doesn't have the romance of yours at all. I tell you, if you, as you listen and get your pencils out or your pens and can do a haiku relating to any vegetables, 5 syllables, first line, 7 the second line, 5 in the third line. We in past shows, we've had people calling in with some great haikus on tomatoes and beets and everything else. So we'd love that. And if you have other questions or comments you want to toss in, please do. Number's 800-642-1234 or email to talk@wpr.org. And we should just talk about for a few minutes before we get into the 10 vegetable facts that we have. What's going on with your lab?
You know, we're breeding beets and we're breeding carrots and onions. We continue to try to develop new varieties that will be useful in Wisconsin and around the world. We've been super interested in flavor and traits that the consumer or the home gardener would really like and appreciate. So we continue to do that kind of work. And then we also study disease resistance. We study, we try to improve the vigor of the plants. And so hopefully over time, we'll produce germplasm that'll be useful to gardeners, to farmers, and produce things people will like to eat.
You know, that badger flame beet that you developed has gotten a lot of ink, and I haven't even had one yet.
Oh goodness! Well, we'll send you some this season. But that's being grown around the world now. It is a beet that has been essentially de-beeted. We've taken the earthiness, that that dirt like flavor, and dialed it down so that it just has kind of a mellow taste and sweetness to it. And I hope you'll like it.
And it's beautiful. You cut it.
We bred that to be, it's kind of a elongated shape, almost like a sweet potato. And we like that shape a lot because anybody who's cut up root vegetables knows that having something in your hand like that is much easier to work with in the kitchen than something that's very round. And so we like the shape and the way it handles in the kitchen.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Well, thank you.
Jonah in Hortonville has something for us. Jonah, what's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I'm a big fan of carnivorous plants, have been since I was a kid, and I'm thinking about finally getting one, raising one, growing one. Do you got a recommendation for a good beginner carnivorous plant?
For your house or for one that would be growing outside?
I live in an apartment on the second floor, so preferably something that can either be on a balcony or a sunny windowsill, something like that.
Okay.
It's a little ironic that you want to eat a carnivorous plant before it might eat you.
Oh, man. Well,
how would you sleep at night? That plant is going to figure this out.
Have you got a recommendation, Jim?
No, I'm sorry. Never worked on carnivorous plants. Just afraid to.
Oh, I see. Well, maybe Irwin's got something for us.
I'm sorry, I don't. I'm here to talk vegetables. We just don't have the depth in this area. But Larry, I bet it's often the case that when Jim and I can't answer the question, you often come to the rescue.
I often come to the rescue, but in this case, I'm not coming to the rescue. But you know what? If there's Jonah, you hang on listening because somebody is sure to call.
Somebody.
And say that they have a carnivorous plant that they're growing and that they like, and that will tell us about it. So hang in there. Thanks, Jonah. Well, Dan in Muscadet has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Dan.
Well, hi there, Larry. I'm counting down today till the 30th. I'm going to miss you a lot. I enjoyed listening to you.
Oh, thank you.
The question I have, though, is I just got some Rover radishes from a friend. I've never planted radishes before. Can I plant them one batch now and then maybe another batch in a month?
Yeah.
Well, how do those work?
Yeah.
They're very, very fast. It's one of the fastest vegetable crops that there is. So you can plant them, and you can plant them in the fall as well, you know, into the fall.
So
in the summer, they will bolt, you know, obviously.
But the Rover, yeah, it's true. I think the Rover radish, though, does fairly well in the heat. Is that one of its features? I believe so.
Yeah, I think that may be right. Dan, there you go. Go right ahead and plant. Plant them now and go from there.
But Jim's right. A typical radish will bolt in the heat, and so you're better off on the shoulder parts of the season. But that Rover, I think, does have some heat tolerance.
Well, if you have an extended fall, though, the fall radishes are the best.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Andy in Eau Claire has a... Andy in Eau Claire has a couple of haikus for us. Let's go there. Hi, Andy. What do you got for us today?
Well, everyone says thank you for taking my call, but really, thanks for taking my call. I was so excited last week when you said the Vickers were going to be on. Since I became a master gardener in 2010, I've missed very few episodes of Garden Talk. And I got to tell you, one memory I have is every time somebody mentions Ruth Stout, what do you say, Larry?
Well, she always gardened in the nude. I usually say that.
Yeah, and then I always yell at the radio, settle down, Larry. But last week after the news, I went to the archive, and I listened to an episode from 2010 with the Vickers, and one thing you guys talked about was the topsy-turvy.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Well, years ago, I was bound and determined to show you that I was going to get it to work and I was going to send you pictures. Well, you never got pictures, did you? Because it never worked.
No, it didn't.
So in honor of the Vickers being back on, and, of course, Larry, your well-deserved retirement, we're really going to miss you. I have a couple of haikus.
All right.
The first one is about the topsy-turvy, and it is, I defied advice. The TT challenge was on. Heed the Vic's wisdom.
the topsy-turvy did not work.
No, it does not.
I like that.
And then one more. How we'll miss the laughs. Talk of haiku and eggplant. Thanks for the memories.
Mm, fun. Sweet. Oh, wow. Sweet.
Very nice.
That's so nice. Thank you for those.
Andy, thank you so much for the haikus and for your comments. The topsy-turvy, you should probably mention what the topsy-turvy is.
I mean, it's the idea that it's like a plastic planter, like, you know, that you can see on television commercials that will grow vegetables upside down, right? So your tomatoes hang underneath the planter rather than you having to support them with a trellis. Jim, do you have any strong feelings about the topsy-turvy? That,
you know, I don't like to express my strong feelings, but it's on TV, right?
It's on TV, right? Something you can see on TV.
It's right next to that article that where you can get, and I do believe you're offered 5 steak knives along with that burger.
Right, exactly.
So let's put that in perspective.
Oh, man, our Vickers of Vegetables, Erwin Goldman and Jim Nian, who's our guest for Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. Great to have you along for Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my Vickers of Vegetables, Erwin Goldman and Jim Nian, who's, and it's wonderful to have them back for this one last time before I head on out of here. Lois in Green Bay has a question about beets, I believe. Lois?
Yes, it is. This is Lois.
Yeah, go ahead. What's your question?
Well, I've been reading about a lot of the ways that people are breeding vegetables, plants for benefits and for flavor. But I am kind of concerned about what happens when we go for more sugar and more flavor. Do we lose some of the health benefits and medicinal benefits, particularly beets, when we breed them for flavor? Because beets are really good for people.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a great question, Lois. I'd say that the good news is the health-promoting properties like the pigments and many of the things in the beet aren't influenced by people breeding for flavor. So we've been able to keep the nutritional content at least as good, if not better, than what we had at the start. And I think it is true that many vegetables are bred for more sugar, or you know, sweeter, or whatever, or longer shelf life. But again, the good news is that, generally speaking, that's independent of their nutritional value. So hopefully, we'll still be in good shape going forward.
Lois, there you go. Thank you so much. Again, you can call us 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. Grant emailed to say, a few years back, a new red potato variety was developed at UW. It was called Red Prairie. And a single grower at Two Madison Farmers Market grew this variety for many years. And sadly, this grower doesn't sell at the farmer's market anymore, and Grant really misses that beautiful potato. Do the Vickers know where this potato can be found around Madison?
Hmm. I don't know the answer to that question, but we do have, both Jim and I have very good contacts with the potato researchers on campus. And so if you would be willing to send me an email, or if you send it to Larry, he can forward it to me. We can put you in touch with the people who curate the potato varieties and the potato germplasm, and hopefully you can get some information that way.
Yeah. Yeah, if you want to send a note to the station, just if you go send another email to talk at WPR.org, address it to me, and I'll get that off to Irwin for that information. We have, you have come up with a list of 10 vegetable facts. This is a profound list, and many folks may want to write it down. And we can take a look at them one by one as we move along here today, and maybe comment on them. The first list of the 10 vegetable facts is, number one, avoid planting, cultivating, and especially eating eggplant.
Jim, could you give some commentary on that, the reason why we think that's so important?
Irwin, I know a lot of you talked about the nutritional value, really, the term mucilaginous. Does not contribute to nutrition, flavor, or anything. So there you go. There's the eggplant.
Now, I looked up eggplant just as in response to what I knew you might say, and the first thing that came up was that it's highly beneficial in weight management.
That's because you can't eat it.
It is
totally soluble fiber. It's like eating an artichoke. All you're going to do is you're going to be regular, likely for weeks.
Well, a cup only contains 20 calories. So if you eat a cup of it, you're only getting 20 calories.
You're eating 20 calories. Of mucilaginous vegetable. Think about it. These are the trade-offs.
The second one, peppers can result in the utterance of spontaneous haiku.
And you heard that here. You heard that happen.
And that's already happened. That kind of. By the way, someone else had emailed and wondered, what peppers, Jim, do you grow in Costa Rica, and would they work here?
The problem here is the high temperatures.
the greenhouse can become 50 degrees centigrade. That's like 110. So, like normal Capsicum annuum, they don't make it. I can't grow. But the plants that you can grow here, right, is the ahi pepper, which is Capsicum, a different species. So I can grow ahi pepper. And in fact, the favorite pepper for making the salsa is that ahi rico, that one we developed about, God, I don't know, 10 or 15 years ago.
So, yeah, so there's...
I got the name.
Yeah, so there...
But I can't, other peppers just can't take the heat.
So actually, peppers do better here than they do.
They do. They absolutely do better there than they do here. It's just too tough.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
We grow a cactus, right? We grow a cactus called the pitaya, which Irwin loved, right? And he'll tell you why. And we also grow maracuya, which here is called, passion fruit.
Passion fruit, yeah. So why do you like this cactus?
This pitaya? The pitaya is known, I think people here might recognize it as the dragon fruit.
Oh!
You know that dragon fruit?
Yeah.
And you can find it here. You can find it in Madison at many markets. And the thing about this is that it has the pigment, that beautiful, intense red pigment, turns out to be the same pigment that's in the beet.
Oh!
So it's you know, people probably would not never associate these two. But in fact, it is a cactus. It's native to the southern, probably Mexico, and it contains the same betalain pigments as the beet.
Oh, very, very good. Well,
it's pollinated by bats.
Yes.
So in the morning you can see the bats, and it's also pollinated by little native bees.
Very cool. We probably have more bees pollinating here than we would have bats, but given the bat populations that we've lost. But interesting fact. Here's our third of the 10. And again, I'll remind, if you're just tuning in, the Vickers have come up with 10 vegetable facts. A profound list, and you may want to write them down. This one, bell peppers symbolize the shallow beauty that has come to define our current age.
Jim, what would you say? I mean, what do you say about the bell pepper? I mean, it is. I mean, compare it to the rest of the peppers for us.
The bell pepper is essentially cardboard covered with sugar. So, I mean, if you're going to eat, you could probably put it on top of an eggplant. But the bell pepper is a tasteless, it simply doesn't have any flavor. The best flavor of peppers, I mean, the aromatic flavor is the Capsicum baccatum. That ahi pepper it's the most aromatic. Look for seed of that. In fact, look for seed of the variety, my variety, ahi rico.
But the bell pepper is sort of like taking the pepper and turning off all of the flavor, right? It's got a visual beauty without having the content.
I question the visual beauty. if you're into square, what about round? Mm-hmm. No problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
No. Well, I am going back. So, what if you let the bell pepper ripen? So it's a red bell pepper. I mean, it's then it's mature. I mean, we're eating it most when they're green, they're baby bell peppers.
Well, the chlorophyll will degrade and you will get synthesis of the carotenoids, and you get a higher sugar, they'll continue to produce sugars. They're sweeter and they are red, yeah.
Yeah.
If you like sweet red cardboard, go for it. And put about 20 calories worth of eggplant on it.
Chris in the Slinger, by the way, emailed to recommend overwintering Badger Flame. Its seeds will come up the following year, and Chris usually grows them in straw and hopes for snow to insulate them. Have you done that, Erwin?
Well, sure. The beet is a biennial, right? So if you take the root and you chill it for a winter period or even maybe 10 weeks, it will flower the next year. Now, I should say that the university wants people to buy seed of that every year instead of people growing their own seed, but we won't go there now. But yes, indeed, and that's something that a home gardener who's interested in producing their own seed of vegetables can do with a carrot, can do with a parsnip, can do with a beet, et cetera, is overwinter them and get seed production the following year.
Let's go to one more of our, before we go to the phones. And you can join in, by the way. The number is 800-642-1234. If you got a haiku or maybe just a question or a comment, hope you'll join in. And email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Here's the fourth one. Some heirloom vegetables are just old varieties and provide the vegetable equivalent of a ride in a 1974 Dodge Dart.
Yeah, you know, this is an interesting thing, Larry. I feel like heirloom vegetables are, you know, there are many wonderful old varieties out there and people have connections to them and they grew them in their family. They handed the seed down from generation to generation. It's all very beautiful. But also, Jim and I are both plant breeders, and I think from a plant breeder's point of view, the heirloom also can represent something that we've improved upon, right? So sometimes the heirloom is missing some of the newer qualities that we've been able to breed in. Jim, would you agree with that?
Especially disease resistance.
Yeah, good point.
That is a very good point. But, you know, most of the time we have our view of the heirloom is very positive.
That's right. That's right. We put it on a pedestal, and I do think that there's something wonderful about that. For example, the heirloom sweet corns that are creamy and they have a texture that you might remember from your childhood is a beautiful thing, but it probably is going to be susceptible to some of the newer pathogens that are out there. So I think maybe we need to balance our heirloom worship with a little bit of modern science.
Yeah. Well, and the heirlooms probably provided part of the stock for the new varieties.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Tim in Madison is with us. Let's go there. Hi, Tim.
Well, hello, Larry. How you doing?
Great.
I am rising up in defense of the lowly bell pepper.
Ooh.
Oh, yes, indeed. Now, every culture has a way to wrap meat and seasonings and who knows what. Now, you're not attacking the tamale. You're not attacking the taco. You're not attacking the, you know, crepe or anything. Why are you attacking the bell pepper? Because the bell pepper, if you put some nice Mexican peppers inside for the taste, not for the wrap, and you cook them up, a bell pepper is a very useful thing and beautiful when you serve it. Mm. So I rest my case.
All right, Tim. All right, responses from...
You know, I have opinions about this, except, of course, the Mexicans domesticated, you know, 90% of the peppers. Most of them are capsicum annuum. You know, they didn't domesticate the bell pepper. That's a European, you know, anomaly, you know. So if you like your tamales, if you like your, you know, your Mexican cuisine, you should really be focusing on the peppers of the region. I mean, if it's a jalapeno, it's from Jalapa, you know, it's
that was a city that worshipped that pepper, you know. So that, the bell pepper was not domesticated in Mexico.
I do think, though, that was a very passionately argued defense of the pepper, and I have to say, you know, I do the visual beauty of that pepper cooked with something in it. I'm with you. I'm with you on that point. Definitely.
All right. There you go. Tim, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And again, join in 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. I've got some more of these lists, vegetable facts, as they're called by our vicars. Here's the next one. In other plants, especially woody plants, are shading your vegetable garden, remove them immediately with a chainsaw. So a vegetable garden requires, I would say, what is it, about 8 hours? 6 to 8 hours of direct sunlight, something like that? Erwin?
That sounds right, Larry.
So if you're saying if...
Yeah, if you're not getting that, then I think the chainsaw is the next thing you need to do. Jim, wouldn't you say?
Especially if it's a walnut.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Absolutely.
Especially if it's a walnut. Oh, peppers don't do well around walnut trees, do they?
No. They get walnut wilt, for sure.
They get walnut wilt, for sure. Let's see. We've got some more here. Most people under the age of 75 weren't ever caught eating beets until Martha Stewart rehabilitated this vegetable in the mid-90s. Now they are as hip as avocado toast.
This has just been something so fascinating to me that over the last 30 years or so, this humble vegetable, the beet, and it's probably true for some of our other humble root vegetables, but they have become rehabilitated. And Martha Stewart was one of the first people in the 90s to sort of, you know, in her show and her magazine, you know, sort of show how you could bring this vegetable back into your repertoire, that it's beautiful and it's got these interesting flavors and colors. And over the years, then they started making beets and walnut, right? The beet walnut goat cheese salad, right? That became a thing, and you could go to any place all over the country, you could find that. So now we have this vegetable that has just become popular again, and I always viewed it as something that was popular with my grandparents' generation. Now it's popular again, and I'm so happy to see it.
Yeah, well, and it's, I mean, talk about something that's good for you.
Oh,
well. Yeah, talk about what we find in a beet.
I mean, first of all, it's got this obvious pigment that runs all over your plate, and some people don't love that. But the pigment has all sorts of interesting health benefits. The pigment is very, very good for you. The beet has B vitamins like folic acid, which are very, very important, particularly important. For pregnant women, many pregnant women take folic acid. The beet has, it actually contains nitrates, which is something you'd want to avoid if you are an infant, but something that is actually celebrated by endurance athletes. So they drink beet juice to improve their nitrogen, the nitric oxide metabolism for their endurance. So beets have all sorts of things going for them, in addition to this earthy flavor and... boy, you know, it's wonderful to see them celebrated once again.
Do you grow beets in Costa Rica?
They are grown, but way up in the mountains, not where I live.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Where it's much, much cooler. Yeah.
It's cold.
Makes a lot of sense. Erwin Goldman and Jim Nienhuis are vicars of vegetables today. Questions for them, give a call. The number's 800-642-1234. 1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on WPR News. Taking a look at vegetables today on the show with our Vicars of Vegetables, Erwin Goldman and Jim Nienhuis. Erwin, professor, and Jim Nienhuis, a professor emeritus in the Department of Plant and Agroecosystem Sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Great to have them with us. And again, you can join in at 800-642-1234. Love to hear from you. Well, this next item on the list of 10 vegetable facts is as follows. Marilyn Monroe was Miss Artichoke at the 1948 Castroville Artichoke Festival, an event that may have launched her acting and singing career.
Yeah, it's an amazing factoid, you know, Marilyn Monroe, one of her earliest notices was as the Artichoke Queen, Miss Artichoke, back in the 1948. Castroville, California is like the epicenter of our country's production of artichoke. I think there's a small group of farmers there that really produce most of the artichokes grown in this country, Jim. Is that right?
It's dominated by one particular family.
Mm. And they have a restaurant there that serves everything on the menu is made with artichokes.
Even coffee.
Even the coffee. Can you imagine?
I've eaten at that restaurant many times, and everything on the menu has artichoke. Even the coffee.
Wow.
So it's wonderful. And you're regular for weeks. You can't get that. That's like an abundance of soluble fiber.
Mm-hmm. But it brings up also this the fact that vegetables, you know, vegetables are woven into our culture. So we have festivals in which we have, you know, for example, in Wisconsin, in Cumberland, Wisconsin, we have the rutabaga festival, right? We have sweet corn festival in Sun Prairie. The vegetable is like a thing people want to celebrate. And here they celebrate the artichoke.
I'm trying to remember where the rutabaga fest is.
It's in Cumberland.
Cumberland, yeah. Mm-hmm. That was one of the cities I used in my PhD research, and as a treatment community, and they make a big deal out of it.
They do, and I think it just shows you how passionate people are. I mean, Jim is reading the haikus, but people are just passionate about the vegetables.
Let's go to Howard in Madison next. Hi, Howard.
Hello there. I'd like to comment that years ago, I was a downstairs neighbor and maintenance mechanic for Jim when he lived in Eagle Heights Apartments.
No kidding.
And at that time, he was working with cucumbers. And I remember we pickled an awful lot of pickles that year. And the other thing about Jim, he was great with the kids. All the neighborhood kids loved him. They climbed on him and harassed him. And he played with him like he was a little kid.
Oh, Jim, I hope you heard that. he's breaking up. Doggone it.
I'm okay. Yeah, that's a long time ago. That was a long time ago. Yeah, but I've always been a little kid.
Yeah, I would kind of go along with that as well, and you're the kind of guy that kids would love. You're the kind of guy that kids would love. Cucumbers were the subject. I do have a haiku on cucumbers, and this goes, "Oh, the cucumber, given part of most salads. It's mostly water." That is about 92%, I'd say, somewhere in that percentage, water. But I like them there. I don't care. I like them. Howard, thanks for calling and sharing that. Jim's downstairs neighbor in grad school. Wow. Blast from the past. Patricia in Stoughton, your turn. Hi, Patricia.
Hi. Well, first of all, I just discovered you and listen to you every day now. But I only discovered you like 3 months ago.
Oh!
Which is so sad.
I'm sorry.
Yes, I'm going to miss you. I am calling in defense of the bell pepper.
Yes.
Yes. I visited Italy and was in contact with some distant relatives. And on every table I ate at in Italy, they had red, green, and yellow peppers in olive oil and garlic, of course, sautéed. You could eat them cold. You could eat them hot. They're wonderful. They might not have flavor by themselves, but if you put a little flavor in there, they're really great. And my favorite recipe is to eat those on noodles.
Oh. You blanch them, or what do you do? Just...
Yeah.
Yeah, blanch them and put them in with noodles. All right. Well, Patricia, thanks for listening. I hope you'll stay listening. Lee's going to do a good job here on the show. And Jill Nadeau will be doing every Garden Talk, or most everyone. And she might ask me back. She was telling me she's going on vacation sometime in the fall. She said maybe I could come back and do a show or two. So I might come back just very, very briefly. But thank you very much. And Brian in Jefferson County, your turn. Hi, Brian.
Yeah. Hello. How are you?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Yeah, thank you. Well, I just wanted to get the professor's opinions with regard to changes in the USDA growing zones. And are we seeing any of those impacts here in the Midwest?
Yeah. Well, we are in Wisconsin.
For sure. I mean, we have much more frequent large rainstorms. Our season has changed considerably. We are definitely seeing that kind of change, Larry. I think you've spoken of this as well.
Yeah, the growing the zones. I mean, we were 4B, now we're 5A, and that's kind of gone up the state, and so it. You know, and if you looked at it in the way that, all right, that gives us a longer growing season. But on the other hand, with the climate change, the tremendous swings in weather raise havoc with our vegetables,
right,
and everything else.
The minimum winter temperature, I think, you know, is increasing, which will affect our pest populations, right? The insects, yeah, and some of the pathogens. So this is a big deal, actually, for us.
And the peaks of very, very high temperatures are also going to be a big problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They are already. Yeah, you're right, Jim. Brian, those are the thoughts. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Let's see. We're getting through. Garlic is indeed better than 10 mothers.
This is a saying attributed to the Chinese people, and it's a wonderful, I love this saying, because garlic, and I think this needs to be said about vegetables in our top 10 list, that, you know, of course they add so much variety to our cuisine, but they are also medicine. And garlic is probably one of our best representatives of that. It is so many curative properties. So I love the saying.
I think it's a great saying. And we don't use it, you know. I spent a year in Trinidad, and down there, I was given a recipe to follow and make, and it involved 10 pieces of garlic, I thought. But when I served it, they said, "Where's the garlic? There's supposed to be 10 bulbs of garlic." Not 10 little pieces. Oh, oh my gosh. Here's one more before we, I know you've got a question for me too, but vegetables like okra have that mucilaginous texture, may be considered food by some, but they are so slimy and gelatinous, two words that many would consider unappealing, Jim.
Yes, I agree.
No more needs to be said about that, I guess.
It just goes to show you that vegetables encompass a wide variety of textures. And there are, and this is part of my issue with the eggplant, the mature eggplant especially. It's the texture that's the issue for me there. Okra is another one. So I think some people love that stuff, some people don't.
Gina from Packwaukee emailed a broccoli haiku. Broccoli with its stalk and a big poof on the top, or my son's haircut.
Oh, great.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, that's a good one.
Oh, man. And Julie had emailed to say that there is a wonderful pepper festival in Beaver Dam on September 12th. They have pepper beer from Potosi Brewing, and I've had that beer, a pepper pie eating contest, and many more fun events.
Nice.
So, very nice.
Yeah, that's a famous trip. That's a famous heirloom.
Yeah. And Jim, you had a question for me that I want to make sure we get to. I'm not sure what it is, but what is it?
I'm sorry, I did not.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well,
It was Irwin that did.
Well, this is on behalf of me and Jim. You know, we've just so enjoyed being on your show, Larry, and being able to talk to folks around the state. Often, Jim and I don't answer the questions and talk about the things we're interested in, and you answer the questions, which is so excellent of you. We're curious to know about your preference. What is your favorite vegetable?
Ooh. Well, I know the tomato isn't a vegetable.
It counts, though. It counts.
I probably would list the tomato, but I tell you, for grilling, my favorite vegetable has become the beet.
Yes!
I love grilled beets, and I, you know, I've.
Do you put them on a sandwich? Do you put them on a burger?
No, I just put a little oil on them, mm-hmm. and grill them along with some other vegetables, and then often the beets are all gone, and the other vegetables are not all gone because they just intensify.
They're so good, right?
Oh man, they are. Absolutely delicious. And your final had to do with spotted cucumber beetles, which are the worst things in the world to eat, especially if you think you're going to be having a tempura squash blossom and you hit one of those. It's not exciting. But Jim and Irwin, I want to thank you both so much. It's been so much fun over the years. To have you here, and it was a real treat for me, and I think for our listeners too, to have you come back. Appreciate it very much, and I wish I could say we'll do it again because we won't. But Jim, it was good hearing your voice, and Irwin, it's always great to see you.
Same, Larry. Thank you so much for having us.
Wow, golly, thank you so much. That was fun. Always fun.
Irwin Goldman and Jim Nienhuis are Vicars of Vegetables, both from the UW-Madison. And a big thanks to you for listening today, and thanks to our team of folks who produce these shows, Clara Neipert, Joel Patnod, Lee Rayburn, and Jeff Robbins. Our executive producer is Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. And thank you for listening again, and stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.